Welcome back to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr. I'm speaking with Ms. Stacey Horn, outstanding author of several books. She loves research. She loves facts. So nonfiction is her thing, and it has led her to the composition of the book entitled Damnation Island. And I tell you, Stacey, it on the one hand, it does my heart good that the people who put this island together, of course, like you said, it was already in place, but it was there, it was available. They decided to use this place and make it a refuge for people who would ordinarily have been considered outcasts. It would be a place of healing, a place of refreshing, a place of positive transformation. But you mentioned that early on, it just didn't work out the way they planned it. What were some of the things that got in the way of it turning out the way they originally designed it?
Well, they made a number of mistakes. They never quite calculated correctly the size of the populations that they were ultimately going to serve. It was basically an island for poor people. For instance, when we talk about the lunatic asylum, we're talking about lower-income lunatics, and forgive me for using the term lunatic, which is not used today. It's considered a slur, but I'm just using the term that was used in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. Wealthy families who had members of their family suffering from mental disorders, they had private asylums, very nice private asylums to send their family members to. So this is for poor people. The almshouse was there for poor people. The hospital that they put there was for poor people. And so they basically miscalculated how many poor people there were. And they vastly, vastly underestimated how expensive it was going to be. It's not, for instance, lunatic asylums are not bad in and of themselves. It's just that they are very expensive to do well. And so they started applying a bunch of economies to keep up with the need, and just every decision that they made was a bad one. For instance, one of the decisions they made was they took people who had been convicted of crimes and sent to the workhouse and then employed them as nurses and attendants in the lunatic asylum.
With no training.
And that went, excuse me?
With no training.
Exactly. Well, it wasn't like there was a lot of training even for nurses. They did start a nursing school in 1872, but nursing schools were still very, very new in the 19th century. But at least, so it isn't so much training as experience.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the biggest problems was this island was overseen by three commissioners. And excuse me. And the department that oversaw all the institutions was called, went by various names, but ultimately the name they went by in the end was the Department of Public Charities and Correction. So the same three men that were responsible for charitable institutions were also responsible for penal institutions. And the fact that they put these groups all together under the same three men and all together on the same island, unfortunately, reinforced this very destructive association in people's minds that persists to this day, that these three groups of people, people suffering from mental disorder, people who are poor, and criminals, are all essentially, to one degree or another, one and the same. Like the mentally ill are to be feared, and poor people are essentially thieves in disguise, and together with the criminals, the actual convicts sent to the island, they're all guilty of something. And that has persisted to this day. And the criminal justice system at the time evolved and remains this way to support that idea. And this is kind of going back to what we talked about earlier. The crimes that we focus on, the crimes that we investigate, are the crimes that are committed by the poor, not the wealthy. We have standing armies in every town, city, state in the United States focused on those crimes. But the size of the workforces in the Securities and Exchange Commission and the FBI and the Attorney General's Office, so on, is puny compared to the vast networks of police departments across the country. So the fact that there are so many people trying to catch poor bad guys compared to the number of people trying to catch wealthy bad guys gives this skewed impression that there are many, many more poor criminals, and that's only because there's many, many more people trying.
That's such an excellent point, because even I know that people might be tempted to think when they hear you and me talk about white-collar crime, and you mentioned SEC, certainly we can think about investment firms where white-collar crime takes place, banks where white-collar crime takes place. But even in larger churches where embezzlement takes place, auto dealerships where embezzlement takes place, and again, you're talking about hundreds of thousands, millions upon millions that can go missing, and that's not sought out as carefully, as thoroughly, as diligently as the $50 robbery or the $100 robbery.
Right, right. And as far as I can tell, I mean, this problem really was cemented in the 19th century on Blackwell's Island. And it isn't just me that notices that. The thing that I came across, like for instance, when I was investigating the workhouse, and that's where people were sent to Blackwell's Island who were convicted of minor crimes like intoxication and disorderly conduct. And the warden of the workhouse, all the wardens had to produce an annual report for the city every year, and I read all these annual reports. And one of the wardens, you know, said in his annual report, you know, hey, I can't help but notice that you only send poor criminals to me, and we know the wealthy commit crimes. So, you know, what's the deal? And he said, it seems to me that the wealthy are, this is telling me that the wealthy can evade the law and punishment.
And as you
and
mentioned,
this is coming from a warden.
Wow. That is amazing. And in the 19th century.
Yeah.
And what was then is now. It continues. In fact, when you look at what we have going on now, does it seem to be pretty accurate when we hear accounts of more, I don't know if I should use the word upscale or if I should use the word decent, but the institutions, the buildings, the facilities that are set aside to imprison the wealthy criminals tend to be much, much better, much, much nicer than the facilities for the poorer criminals?
Absolutely. I just did an op-ed for the New York Daily News about Rikers Island. My book ends in 1895 when the Department of Public Charities and Correction were separated into two departments, which is something that should have been done all along. So one department was only responsible for charitable institutions, and one was responsible for correction. And by that time, they recognized that the penitentiary and the workhouse were so horrible that they just couldn't be fixed. So what they decided to do instead was they bought Rikers Island, and once again, they were going to build state-of-the-art institutions there. They were going to build a brand-new penitentiary and a brand-new workhouse, and they were going to get it right this time. But they made pretty much all the same mistakes that they had made before, because they somehow got the idea that the problem was in the buildings and not in the criminal justice system that put people there. And so Rikers Island just became as bad and in many ways worse in the 20th century and in the 21st century than the penitentiary and the workhouse on Blackwell's had been in the 19th century.
When we come back, would you talk with us some about what you share in your book about some of the conditions that the institutionalized had to deal with when they were on Blackwell's Island, such as the bathing situation?
Sure.
Okay. Our guest is Ms. Stacey Horn. Stay with us. We'll be right back.